The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter than a blue jay, what can talk possum, and faster than a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning.
So here's your plain-spoken homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, how are you, kids? Folks, we rarely break news on this program because if you break it, you got to fix it, and we don't have the budget. But I want to tell you, we are breaking some news today. Albin, what is today's? It's Wednesday, right. Because I have in the studio a dear old friend, my friend Norman Stone, the film director. He's working on a film, has been working on a film for many years, just completing it, called The Final Fix. When you hear what this is about, you should be a little bit incredulous. You should at least be intrigued. I also have in the studio with me my new friend, Owen Fielding. He's director of clinical services with NET Recovery Corps, a U.S. health tech company, and owner of NET Device. You wonder what that is. They're going to tell us now. Folks, welcome to the program. Norman, you are film director. Tell us what your colleague Owen does, because when I just read this description, people are wondering, what's this all about? What's this film about? Give us the summation.
The best summation is the incredulous one, which is there is a treatment for addiction, any addiction, but we were specifying opioids as the main one, that claims to get people off that drug of addiction in 5 to 7 days with little or no pain, and then, the kicker, no more cravings ever.
Okay, so this is what we must call a miracle cure. If it is what it purports to be, this is an out-and-out miracle cure. It ought to be worth infinite billions of dollars because the opioid crisis in America is one of the most severe crises of any kind anywhere. It is as serious as it gets, certainly in the West. Owen is you're on the creative side. You've created a film about this. So, Owen, what do you do with regard to what we've just mentioned?
Eric, that's a good question.
And by the way, you're from Scotland. That's why you talk that way.
Yes.
Just in case anybody's wondering what's going on
Scotland
around here.
I'm from Scotland, and I shall speak slowly.
Slowly.
I'm director of clinical services, and my responsibility is to integrate the treatment into the commonplace sector for treatment alongside other addiction treatments. So we're trying to develop a complementary treatment to other treatments with an evidence base.
Can I translate?
Please.
What that means is, because he's very official on this.
You also live in Scotland, and you don't have a similar accent.
No,
how do you explain
does,
it?
Though, and that's
okay.
The story.
All right.
So what Owen is a very experienced practitioner in this new treatment. And when I was doing the film, which, as you say, we're just completing, I needed to do a trial, and I needed to be professional, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I didn't even choose the guys that went on it. And I needed someone who I could trust to be honest, strong, true, and do what it does. So I hired this guy in and filmed everything, looking for the fault, because I'd come across this before. I'd filmed the thing before years ago. And the trial, if it didn't work, I was going to show. And if it did work, I was going to show.
Okay, so that's the key here, because we're talking about something. I think that there are many people listening who are naturally, and I would say wisely, skeptical. When somebody claims a miracle cure with such dramatic ramifications, you say, wait a minute, or as you would say, hang on a tick. This isn't possible. How is it that we could have gone decades and decades with all kinds of addiction crises, and we've never come close to anything that's as dramatic a cure? So how do you respond, either of you, to those kind of objections?
I think as Joe Winston, our CEO, smartly said, there has been a reluctance to accept neurostimulation in the early days because it wasn't understood. Now we're beginning to understand it. There's a different reason why a treatment like NET is treated very sceptically, and that's because it shortens the treatment time down to 5 to 7 days. Most of the treatment centres in America make money on length of stay, length of treatment. So
if I go to rehab,
yeah,
they're making money, so it's a business. Rehab is a business. And it seems to me that if I were addicted to heroin or any of these other powerful drugs, the idea that anyone could be cured of it, I'm skeptical of that to begin with. It doesn't matter when you go to rehab. What's the magic of rehab? I have no idea what the great magic is when you go to rehab. There's never really been a cure, any kind of cure. So rehab, it seems to me, is treating it somehow. It's the best we can do. But you are claiming an actual cure that only takes days. It does seem hard to believe. You just said that people have been skeptical about, what did you call it,
It's a neurostimulation treatment.
Okay, so practically speaking, what is it? In other words, is it a band that I wear around my arm?
It's a small device, the size of a smartphone, and it's pre-programmed for each patient according to their medical health history and their drug-taking history. And what that's basically doing is accelerating what the brain would do on its own, but it would take many, many weeks or months. So the brain has plasticity naturally, and that means that's the brain's ability to reform those neural pathways that were disturbed by taking and disrupted by taking drugs.
But more specifically, how does it work? There's a device, and what is it connected to?
It's connected to a computer. So we have a secure cloud base where all the programs are stored. So we're talking algorithms here, and it's low pulse electricity. So
how is it administered to the patient?
It's administered across the surface of the skin behind each ear. There's a gel electrode.
Behind each ear?
Yep,
behind
each
we've
ear.
Finally gotten to specific. So you put an electrode behind each ear.
Yep.
And how long does it take? In other words, you go in for a session. How long's a session?
The patient will wear that continuously for 5 to 7 days, and then they don't need the treatment again. That's it. It's done.
So this is day and night for 5 to 7 days?
Yes.
All right. So, Norman, you've been working on this film and you've been interested in this for decades now.
Yeah.
When did you first bump into this, and why, if this has existed for so long and if it's such a miracle cure, how come it has not been publicized? Why hasn't somebody realized I can make an infinite amount of money off of this? Is like curing cancer. Why, if this has existed, if it exists now, why hasn't someone capitalized on it?
It's usually the opposition that are making a lot of money, billions of dollars on the system as it stands. This uses no pharmacy at all. Sorry, I'll say that again. This uses no pharmacy at all.
Okay, there's no drugs involved,
no.
So Big Pharma is against this. But I guess my question is, how can they oppose something like this? What does this have to do with what do they have to do with each other? I can understand how they'd be frightened by losing all their business.
They can turn their backs. They can elongate ideas of how long it's going to take. You need another $10 million to do this. You need so much to do that before you get FDA approval. And there's more and more. I watched this. When I first came across this many years ago, it was bizarrely because I accidentally sat next to Eric Clapton. And I didn't even recognize it was Eric Clapton. He had a strange hairstyle at that time.
What year are we talking about?
1975.
Whoa, wait a minute.
I was three.
In 1975,
yeah.
You were sitting next to Eric Clapton. Where were you?
I was in Harley Street at the home of the missionary doctor that pioneered this.
Okay, what is her name?
Meg Patterson.
Okay, Meg Patterson has since passed away, but I know she's in your film because I saw it. She's the one that discovered this, and I think you told me that there were people, wealthy, famous rock stars like Eric Clapton, who were addicted to heroin and so on and so forth. They were able to avail themselves of this in 1975.
Yes, indeed. And that's their managers that avail themselves of it because they were losing money on their stars. And it worked. And I watched it a bit skeptically, and I took it to the BBC and said, Eric Clapton, Eric Clapton, Eric Clapton. And those magic mantra words got me in my first commission as a film back then. So I went in it hard, and I said to Meg Patterson, if it fails, I'm going to show it. If it isn't, I'm going to show it.
And okay, it that's 1975. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to find out what happened since 1975. We'll be right back.
I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dull surprise.
Folks, can you guess? That's Eric Clapton on guitar. Why? Because I'm talking to my friend Norman Stone, the filmmaker who began the process of all these years looking into what's culminated in this film, The Final Fix, a cure for addiction or the cravings that lead to addiction. And Norman, you were just telling us a story that it was 1975. You're sitting next to Eric Clapton, who had then been cured by this woman and by this device, and all these years later, it's never really gotten any purchase in the culture. And so here we are sitting 10,000 years later. The film is just being made that you began all those years ago. So I just want to kind of get this picture of why. What happened? Because there, anybody who struggled with addiction in the last decades would say, why isn't this available to me? It's sickening.
You should know that Meg Patterson herself did not believe that this was real when she first came across it. She was working as a missionary doctor in Hong Kong in a very poor charity hospital. And they used electrostimulation through acupuncture for medical reasons, to numb things, to do whatever. It was learned in China. A colleague brought it across. But what she didn't know is that half the people in Hong Kong were addicted to opium. So when they went through their little operations in post-operative checkups, they said, ever since you used the needles, doctor, I don't smoke opium anymore. And she patted them on the head and said, next, next, next.
Okay, so this is, I love these Genesis stories because it makes sense, right? You're telling me that a technology which is an Eastern technology, it's an Eastern thing. It comes over from China into Hong Kong. It's the 60s, it's the 70s. She's a missionary doctor. And this is something that just happens, and they observe it. They weren't doing this specifically to cure opium addiction, but this is when she noticed.
True.
That
she
something
didn't believe it.
Something
didn't
has happened, and you're saying she didn't believe it, the missionary doctor.
And in the end, she said to me one time, Norman, she said, every time I did this, I thought something's wrong here, but it must be having a biological effect. So she didn't buy the whole acupuncture thing, but she knew it was having an effect. And this is a very famous missionary doctor. The Queen had given her lots of honors and so on. She was an expert. But she pursued it, and she started trying it out on people who she knew were addicts, and it worked for them as well. And then she came over to London and started to develop it further, and I did this film, and I thought, hey, you know, this is Florence Nightingale time.
How did you bump into, tell me her name again?
Meg Patterson.
And how did you happen to be there sitting next to Eric Clapton?
Okay. Because her husband, George Patterson, who was also missionary, but not a doctor, but an unusual sort of man, and he had made films that I'd seen on TV and really liked. And I thought, well, there's a Christian guy making films. And I got to know him. He said, come home and meet the wife. I did, sat next to someone called Eric. I didn't know who he was.
So you didn't know it was Eric Clapton?
No.
I love it.
They kept that quiet because he's a patient. And then I discovered he was, and then the BBC said, go explore this treatment. We took somebody off the streets, tried it. The guy came off. In those days, it was 10 days. I saw him just the other month. He now lives up in Scotland, 44 years later.
Who are we talking
still
about?
Still off. The man that I used to see if this thing worked, an addict who couldn't get off any other way, he came off clean in 10 days.
And what year was that?
1975.
Okay, that was also 75.
Yeah.
I always want to understand why you know, things haven't worked. What's the, because there has to be an answer. Most people are saying this is preposterous. Unless you can explain to me, you know, I wouldn't buy it that you discover the cure in 1975 and that nobody knows about it until now. You know, I need to understand why, and you're helping us understand this.
Okay, let me just be very simple. I've thought about this a lot, as you'd imagine. It's three P's: power, profit, prestige. That gets in the way of people opening up their minds. Science is not as open-minded as it should be, as we were hearing last night.
Yeah.
It was absolutely, if you get a good system that's making you billions of dollars, why disturb it? If you're in a position of power and you're backing a different system, why let it move? It's very easy to close the door on threatening new ideas, even though they may work. And then you add the big pharma into it, and my goodness, you're in.
Well, you referred to the FDA earlier, that they require trials and this and that. Did they have an opportunity to look at this, and they made the process difficult? When would that have happened?
1977, 1978, 80, 84.
So the United States Food and Drug Administration had an opportunity 40 years ago to look at this, and they effectively screwed it up.
They have an opportunity to look at it now. Have you heard the phone ringing?
No. That's pretty dark to think about when I think of all the suffering caused by various addictions. When did Meg Patterson pass away?
2002.
Okay. So who's been carrying the banner for this? I mean, have you been in your way, or is this
no,
was this her
I make
thing?
Her the films, but I can't get this off my shoulders because it was clearly working and people weren't looking at it. But you know, you're part of this. I mean, it was Mer Patterson, the daughter of George and Meg Patterson, who married a chap called Joe Winston, and he's the man. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Joe Winston.
Yep.
Okay, and he's still among us.
Yes.
Okay, so he's been trying to push this forward as an American, as an impatient, entrepreneurial American. You know, when I hear about these things, my first instinct is to get angry at the injustice, the horror that there has been this thing. There ought to be money being made hand over fist at curing addictions, not at, you know, just kind of to helping these people along a little bit. And so, yeah, you want to say if there's – it seems to me that there would be a lot of money to be made, and that's a proper incentive, right? In other words, if you can figure out a way to get this to people. Well, this is – I know what you're going to say, and I want to hear it. Go ahead.
No, there's little money to be made compared to the system that makes billions.
Well, that's a fact. That's a fact.
And you take away their money and you try to act responsibly. In 1977, Johnson & Johnson came into their lives and offered to buy it out to bury it.
Now that's, Norman, is that in the film?
Nope.
You don't, well.
It will be in future films.
Okay. Well, anyway, I want to mention again, thefinalfix.com. People can go to that website and find out more. But, okay, Johnson & Johnson, you're claiming that the Pattersons brought this to their attention in 1977 with the purpose, of course, of getting their leverage to bring this to the world, to help people. And
they wanted to stop it.
To kill it.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because it's a threat to the whole system as it exists.
And Johnson & Johnson is making money how from the system?
Because it uses something called drugs to sell.
Yeah.
And the big pharma drugs, they were part of that. And it did challenge everything that they were doing on that level. It's not just them. I remember around the same time, because I was interested just watching it, the Beverly Hills Clinics wanted an exclusive right on this. And George and Meg, good Christian missionaries that they were, said it has to be for everyone. Let the rich people supplement the poor people, but we're not sort of selling it off for everyone to get rich. And they held to that, rightly or wrongly, as some critics have said, they held to that. I admire them for it, but it didn't get the thing through.
I was going to say there are two sides to that, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that you know, it hasn't gone anywhere in decades, and so nobody's benefited. And maybe it would have been better if you put it in the free market. And you know,
hindsight's a wonderful thing.
No, I know. Yeah. But okay. But now, Owen, you, what were you doing before this came to your attention?
I was doing quite a lot of street work with addicts and homeless people in my community in Dumfries and Galloway through the churches that I was involved in. And I began to manage a rehab center, and Joe Winston appeared one day with this device. I was extremely skeptical. But
now tell me again, who's Drew Winston?
Joe Winston's the CEO.
Oh, Joe Winston, yeah.
So I was extremely skeptical, but I quickly saw that this device was a real turnaround for people who are struggling with addiction.
I mean, it must have been a little shocking, frankly. I mean, here you are working with addicts, rehab. This is a holy grail. This doesn't exist. And some guy shows up and says, try this. And you said that you saw it work.
I was astounded.
When was this?
This was 2009.
Okay. So my goodness, over 10 years ago.
Yeah. So that rehab finally ran out of money. It was a Christian rehab. It was poorly funded. And I contacted Joe and said, if you ever need help to get the story of this machine out there, call me. And 2 months later, he called me and he said, I'm setting up quite a big pilot in Scotland. So it ended up being a 4-year national pilot. And I ended up helping Joe to run that, and we treated several hundred people. So,
and there was success.
They were a success. So there's a data set sitting with the FDA at the moment, Eric. There are 552 participants from Kentucky and Scotland over a 4-year period. Symptomatology for...
We have to go to a hard break. Forgive me. That's called a cliffhanger in show business. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion.
Hey, folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss, like, playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a 3-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Heroes and role models have always been tremendously important to me. In my new book, 7 More Men, I tell the uplifting and inspiring stories of Martin Luther, George Whitefield, William Booth, George Washington Carver, Sergeant Alvin York, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and Billy Graham. Each of these men had the courage to surrender themselves to a higher purpose for the sake of others. Become acquainted with these 7 incredible heroes and your life will be immeasurably richer. Order your copy of 7 More Men today. For more info, go to my website, ericmetaxas.com.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday.
Hey there, folks. We are talking to the director of a new film called The Final Fix. You can find out more at thefinalfix.com. My friend Norman Stone and his colleague in this, Owen Fielding. Owen, you were just making a point before we went to the break. I wanted to hear you continue because you said that the data that you got in this 4-year study is now in the hands of the FDA.
Yes.
And you said it was 500 participants who were from Kentucky and Scotland.
Yep.
Okay.
So they received net treatment, mostly for opiates. Some of them were addicted to cocaine, but most of them, crucially, were poly drug users. So they were taking multiple substances.
I've never heard that term.
Yeah.
Poly drug. That's a very nice way of saying very messed up.
So in other words, this treatment can handle a polydrug situation, which is complex.
Wow.
So what we found was, and more importantly, what the principal investigator found, the researcher who analyzed the data, was that if we're looking at withdrawal symptomatology, that was reduced by 80%, and that's that group, and craving was reduced by 92%. It's completely unheard of in the treatment world.
It's pronounced unheard of, not unheard of. Norman, who are these people you bring to me? I can't tell you how much I love the way you speak, so forgive me for making fun of it.
Just speak in English?
Yeah. What you're saying, you say it's unheard of. It is so outrageous when you're talking about withdrawal 80%, 92%. What did you say?
They had no craving or significantly reduced craving.
Okay. So this data, before we go to Norman, is, you said, with the FDA now. How long has it been with the FDA?
Probably just a few weeks now.
Okay. So this is red hot stuff. So the question is, what do you suppose they will do with it? How long do they normally take to respond to something like this?
We're expecting a fairly quick turnaround because clearly there's an issue here for America and for Scotland that the NET might be able to help with. So the FDA, I think, is quite keen to help us receive type approval for this device so that it's an approved medical device that can be used in America, and we can help many, many people.
I'm just astounded. I'm absolutely astounded. Now, Norman, you managed to land Ewan McGregor to be the narrator of your film.
Yes.
And it's pronounced Ewan McGregor.
Is
everybody involved with this Scottish? This is pretty interesting.
A lot of people are.
But Ewan, for those who don't know, Ewan McGregor plays what? I'm trying to think. He's been in so many
Kenobi
films.
Well, Obi-Wan Kenobi is a young man. But the main one, why I wanted to get him and thank him for doing it, actually, is he was in Trainspotting, a film about drug addicts in Edinburgh. So he was, in a way, the world's favorite heroin addict. And he's a great guy. And he took to this. So he really was impressed by it. And he did a very, very sensitive and very good voiceover commentary.
I mean, he's also, for people, he was in, I can't think of the film, the musical with...
Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge. And he was in that movie with Renee Zellweger.
Love, about Peter Rabbit?
Love, no. Plays Catcher Block. It's really funny. It's a takeoff on the Doris Day, Rock Hudson, Pillow Talk stuff.
Right.
But that's an amazing movie. But so Ewan McGregor is the narrator, and this is obviously a documentary film. How long is the film?
The director's nice and gentle cut is 104, but the 90-minute one is what's going to sing.
Okay.
The 90-minute.
All right. And you're doing screenings in Washington, D.C. this week.
Mm. On Capitol Hill. There's a rumor that the White House may be inviting us to have a look at it. I say a rumor. I've got to hear about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people in D.C. Who are interested, of course, in the bleakness of the heroin and the opioid addiction. And the question is, can you get to them and can they believe before they close the door on you and say next, can you get to them to talk? It looks like we can. So we're going there to spread the word on that.
I'm just so thrilled that you're getting some traction with this. Let's just go back to the Pattersons. You said that this was discovered by accident by a missionary doctor in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often the way we discover these kinds of things, by accident. We notice something. And so all those years, I think you mentioned to me in our previous time together, you said that other famous people, not just Eric Clapton, had availed themselves of this technology in the 70s.
Yes. They were always very discreet about it because medical patients.
Because nobody knows that Keith Richards is a drug addict. We should never mention that. Edit that out in case anybody...
That was in 1977 that happened.
Yeah.
I went across to interview him, but by the time I got there, he was already absolutely fit and free.
So you went to interview Keith Richards about this?
Well, yeah.
When you were working for the BBC, and he was not interested in talking about it?
He was so healthy, I didn't get close. He was on his own tick again with Mick Jagger was calling and all that stuff. So he didn't actually get it. But I talked to his doctor.
Did he ever get back with the Stones?
Did what?
Did Keith Richards ever get back with the Stones? How did that work out?
Yes.
Okay.
Quite a bit.
It's so incredible to me that there were people all those years ago who benefited from this. And that somehow word did not get out. I mean, it seems to me that Keith Richards and Eric Clapton should have been screaming about this.
The papers screamed a lot. And then, have you ever met a rock star? They're a little...
Other than Albin?
No offense, gentlemen.
No.
But they're a little like people who own the sweet shop and want to keep eating sweets when they want to. No one tells them what to do. They are whatever they want, they get. And I'm not on about drugs. When they're clear from that, they're very much the iconic bosses.
Sorry, we're going to another break. We'll be disparaging rock stars in the next segment as well. Stick around. Folks. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Norman Stone, my friend, the film director, and his colleague in crime, Owen Fielding. Norman, you just, during the break, gave me some numbers. Would you repeat this? This is insane what you just said.
Well, everyone knows that America's got an addiction crisis.
Yeah.
And if you look at the figures internationally, there's only one country worse than America.
So America is the second worst country with regard to opioid addiction on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that alone is stunning because we are the world's wealthiest country, and you're saying that we are almost the worst in opioid addiction. Okay, so who is the worst?
Scotland.
Scotland.
Little Scotland. 5 million people, and they spend £9 billion on treating alcohol and
okay, so that's more than $10 billion a year, mm-hmm. treating these things. And you said their success rate for their $10 billion or more dollars is
3%. 3%.
If they spent zero, I think the success rate would be 4%.
Actually, it's 3%. I checked. If you do nothing, you get 3%. But okay, they close their doors to other options because they've got their mindset on how they think it should be treated.
3%.
Yeah, 3%.
They're wasting money.
And this thing, I have to tell the truth, is 82%.
Yeah.
When we check it out. So for the price of an AA battery, but it breaks the system. It breaks the money flow. It breaks stuff like that, which is really annoying, to say the least. And hopefully this film will shake it up. So if people want to find out more, do go to TheFinalFix.com and push for the film.
TheFinalFix.com. I mean, this is the kind of thing so many people listening know someone who has struggled with this or families that have been ruined by this. The idea that this exists and we can't get it out to people is sickening in a free culture. It's absolutely sickening. I guess other than going to TheFinalFix.com, I suppose people in Congress ought to know about this. I mean, I don't know if people have connections out there, but it's just madness to me. I mean, do you think the FDA will do something positive about this, Owen?
I'm sure they will, Eric. There's already a similar device, a less effective device that's had type approval, but it only works for opiates. And our device works on the same premise, but is allegedly much more effective. That's still to be...
But if something works for opiates and you're saying it's out there, why isn't it more widely known? Why isn't it being used to destroy these addictions?
A small family business. They don't have tens of millions of dollars to put into R&D, to put into randomized clinical trials. But that's about to change.
It's unbelievable. Norman, I've known you for so many years, and you've done so many films. I ought to have mentioned it when we started, but you were put on the map in the 80s when you did Shadowlands for the BBC with Joss Ackland and Claire Bloom, the story of C.S. Lewis's relationship with Joy. I always don't know, what do I say, Grisham or Gresham?
Joy Grisham would be fine.
Joy Gresham.
Joy Davidson.
Joy Davidson. You made that in 1984. You've been making films ever since. And ever since I have known you, which is a long time, you've been talking about this film.
Yes, because it was something you can't get off. I love telling stories. I love doing dramas, and that's done very well for me. But when you see something that has deliberately been avoided, where you see the bad guys winning an awful lot of the time, and then it gets worse. It was when the opioid crisis finally bit, I thought, you feel a weight on your shoulders, you know the feeling, and you think, I've got to go at this. I need it like a hole in the head because I want to do dramas. But I thought, no, we've got to do it. And we put our shoulders to the wheel, and people were very helpful and very able and sacrificial, and we've done the film that tells the truth. Mm. Now the trick is, we're out of money, of course, but it's to get it out there and show people the film. And I tell you, it's a bit like Madame Curie discovering radium, but no one's wishing to pronounce the word radium. Or the cure for cancer, as you mentioned earlier. I'd posit that this is a little bit more. important because of such a growing addiction?
Because of the impact on GDP.
Yeah.
The American government released some financial figures that said they've worked out that $2.5 trillion is the cost in the last 4 years to the U.S. economy.
Of opioid addiction.
Of $2.5 trillion.
Yeah, $2.5 trillion for addiction, not just for the opiates crisis.
I wonder if the president of the United States, who doesn't typically listen to this program, would realize that this would be I can't think of anything better that a president could do. I mean, for the economy alone,
exactly.
But for Americans, but I mean, seriously, it's an extraordinary thing. You know what it is? I think that we're all skeptics, and most of us think that you never get something that's too good to be true that's actually true. You know, it's one of those things that. But those things do happen now and again. Now and again, missionary doctors do stumble on things in strange ways. And it's funny to think, Norman, you've been making films for so many years. There's footage in this film, which is coming out in 2020, that you took in 1975.
Yeah.
Have you ever spent that much time making a film?
Nope. Certainly the most unusual film I'll ever make, and I think the most important.
I mean, you were an extremely young man when you started making this film. And now it's 2020, and finally it looks like we're going to get a look at it. I'm in awe that, you know, we get to have this conversation, because what a wonderful thing it would be. We rarely see things like this in the world where, you know, I was there when addictions were effectively cured. It would be pretty wonderful.
The corner could be turned, and it should be turned now.
I would think so. So you said you don't have a deal on the film yet. The film is made, but you're talking to different people and stuff. So by God's grace, we'll be able to see the film relatively soon. That would be pretty terrific.
If you look on the website on March the 1st, I'm committed to showing a chunk of the film at least, or to tell you that Netflix have bought it. They've just asked to see it.
All right.
And there's one or two others of the big streamers also in the play. So we'll see. But we can't keep hanging it on and hanging it on. This is beyond profit. This is beyond distribution. This is, people are dying while we're talking right now.
And Owen, you've seen people's lives changed by this.
Absolutely. Yes.
Which is why you're here.
That's exactly why I'm here. Yeah.
It's just extraordinary.
I believe in this.
All right. Well, I will. We'll leave it at that. Thefinalfix.com is the website. Folks, we're not blowing smoke here. This is really a big deal. Congratulations to both of you for pushing this forward. And if we can help you further, let us know. God bless you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Let me help.
Hey there, folks. I don't want to scare you, but I need a haircut badly. If you're watching this on video, you can see that I'm starting to look like Shemp Howard, way too much like Shemp Howard.
And I'm looking more and more like Curly.
And Chris Himes says nothing.
That makes me Mo, maybe?
Or Larry?
You don't look like Mo. You look like Curly Joe Derita.
Curly Joe Derita?
Such a pinch. Don't you remember in Abbott and Costello, he played Stinky?
Oh,
okay.
All right. He played Stinky. He had one of those like kid suits, like he would dress like, you know, with the all day sucker. And that he dressed like, he dressed like, sorry, what's his name? You know, it's like
Spanky? Spanky?
Fauntleroy. No. It was like the little Lord Fauntleroy look. The kind of, you know, Buster Brown look.
He was
a grown man, and it was Curly Joe Derita, and he said, I'm going to give you such a pinch. Anyway, listen,
we're grown men too. So.
We have so many exciting things going on, but I've just got to let my audience know, because we're going through a tough time right now, let me make a couple of quick announcements. Number one, if you're not signed up for our newsletter, you have got to go to ericmetaxas.com. Please sign up for our newsletter. Number one, ericmetaxas.com. Number two, please follow me on Twitter and on Facebook. And on Instagram, I'm posting all kinds of wacky videos and things. You got to check it out.
Next thing I got to say, my book, Seven More Men, like I think Amazon ran out or something like that. We're going through a weird time. Please order it anyway. You'll get it as soon as possible. But that's my brand new book that is out. And one of the men in that book is Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Another man is Billy Graham. We have spoken on this program to their sons, Ignat Solzhenitsyn. One of the greatest conversations I've had was with Ignat Solzhenitsyn. We played it the other day. And then the other day we spoke to Franklin Graham. Really just fantastic interviews. And of course, the sons of two of the men in my new book, Seven More Men. I also want to say, because everybody's going through a tough time right now, you're looking for something to watch on TV. Do not forget, folks, please, patternsofevidence.com. Okay. My friend Tim Mahoney doing amazing stuff. If you want to see a film about the historicity of the Bible, of the Moses account, all this kind of stuff, Tim Mahoney's been on the program, but now you can go to patternsofevidence.com. And you will see when you go to patternsofevidence.com, it's a great thing to watch with the whole family. Similarly, No Safe Spaces, our friend Dennis Prager. I'm just infuriated that Netflix and Amazon Prime have deplatformed No Safe Spaces. This is sick stuff. So I hope you will support that film. You should see it anyway. You go to nosafespaces.com, use the code SAVE25, and you'll save 25% on that. And before we go, let me finally say that our two major sponsors on this program are Mike Lindell's MyPillow.com, and then, of course, our friends Pete and Seth Talbot. They're the folks behind Relief Factor, which I ought to say more often, I use every single day, and it works. And then, of course, they're behind Honor Bound Coffee, honorboundcoffee.com. All their profits go to helping military families. But a word on Relief Factor. I haven't bragged on that often enough. I am amazed that it works. And I want to say, because sometimes in the short commercials, you don't get this. The reason the Quick Start Pack is $19.95, they take a loss on that because they are banking on the fact that if you order that and take it as they instruct, that if you have pain, the chances are so high that Relief Factor will help your pain. And these are botanicals, okay? It's not like popping Advil or whatever we do. That they're banking on the fact that even at a loss, you will reorder because you'll say this stuff works. So I want to reiterate that is a kind of an amazing thing. That's Relief Factor. I just want to thank my friends Pete and Seth Talbot. Anyway, thanks for listening and thanks for patronizing those who patronize us, although we try not to be patronizing. Thank you.